Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm certified, baby. I've got tats saying I am a certified Japanophile. I'm ready to get the show on the road and yeah, I'm a little sleepy, to be honest, Chris.
That'd be a great voice clip. That'd be a great soundbite. Just to stick somewhere. You sent me, so ladies and gentlemen, Pete sent me a nice little picture today online on our little conversation of his watch, his wristwatch, with a photo of Pete and me, Pete and I in Japan doing something. Turns out it's our 1 year anniversary since your last trip to Japan, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I got a little a little smartwatch, because I saw it and I thought, I'll see what they're like, and I always stick on eBay if it doesn't work out for me. And I've been loving it, quite frankly, but every now and again, it'll sort of buzz my arm and go, here is a 1 year anniversary of this happening. And the only time it's done it so far is pictures of Chris and your friend, your mate, who's American, I believe. He's a very charismatic man.
Nelson.
That's him.
Canadian guy. I've mentioned him in my videos before, just simply as Canadian guy, because I wanted to keep him anonymous. And now I've ruined that anonymity by saying his name.
That's why you listen to the podcast, because it gives you behind-the-scenes knowledge of the Abroad in Japan YouTube channel.
Absolutely. I've had a weird day. I've just come back from Yamaguchi Prefecture, and I've eaten fugu, which is the blowfish.
Wow.
First time I saw fugu was in The Simpsons, back in the golden days of The Simpsons in the early 90s. One of my favourite episodes, I think it's season 2 or 3, Homer eats some, he goes to a Japanese restaurant, and he has some blowfish, and it's been poorly cooked or poorly prepared by some crappy chef. And he eats the poison, and he's told he's got 24 hours to live. And it's a really good episode, I absolutely love it. And that's all I could think about as I was eating this bloody blowfish. I even watched the chef carve the blowfish up before me. It was the most graphic thing I've ever seen in my life. He got this polystyrene box out, opened it, and there was a blowfish alive there. And he sort of pulled it out, and the blowfish was blowing, like they do, puffing up and down. And it was horrible. We just pulled out a knife and decapitated it to pieces while it was still alive.
Oh no.
And I felt really bad for the fish. Like I wasn't expecting that at all. I thought it was gonna already kind of be dead and I'll look more, well, not look as fresh as it was, shall we say. I witnessed this live fish just being carved alive, basically. Alas, the fugu itself, the raw fugu, was really nice, very kind of chewy, rubbery texture.
Right.
If you put it in some soy sauce, it's rather good. It's full of collagen, apparently, so it's good for the skin.
I like the fact that it's like, oh, it's really rubbery, and then you put it in soy sauce, and then it's nice. It's like, do you just like soy sauce, Chris? Is that the situation?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have much flavour, so it was basically just soy sauce tasting rubber.
There's a reason why
it kind of worked.
It's a hard man dish, isn't it, for hard men?
It's a hard man dish.
Yeah.
It requires special training. You need like a certificate to actually be able to do it. And if you, Apparently, a few people do die every year, but they're always people who have just caught the fish and boldly proclaim, I can cook this, and then they mess it up.
Yeah.
But when the guy pulled it apart, ripped it apart with a knife, he separated it into the bits that are poisonous, the bits that are edible. And it was really interesting. Like, he was quite graphic again. He pulled out, like, the heart and was like, no, don't eat that. Then he, like, cut out the liver and he was like, no, don't eat the liver. Apparently, they're poisonous because the blowfish eat a lot of shellfish. So rather than the poison being kind of created or, like, what would you say, produced within the fish, they just eat a lot of poisonous seafood, other fish that are poisonous or have minute amounts of poison. Then it just sort of accrues within the blowfish. But there are places in Japan, I think, I want to say Oita Prefecture. No, that's wrong. But there is a place in Japan where you can really eat the liver, the poisonous liver of the blowfish, because they are raised in such a way that they don't eat other poisonous fish. But it's a weird dish. It's kind of pricey. The dish that we had, it's like $150 portion. So it was for a video, which is coming out soon. But yeah, I don't think I'd eat it again, really. But worth trying once.
It's enormous.
The fish looks
you.
Really cool. I love the fish.
Yeah, they do. They're big old heavy fish, aren't they? Like, they're big fat koi.
Well, like a balloon, basically.
Yeah.
Like a fishy balloon.
Delicious.
But I'm excited about the video going out. I looked up a video about blowfish, about fugu, on YouTube, and I saw a video with 40 million views, which I've never seen that.
Jeez.
It's very rare to see a video with that many views.
Yeah.
40 million views, and it's about fugu. It's just about blowfish. It's not even a good video, I don't
think. Maybe you should go back and do a little video.
Yeah, so the video, we're filming it in November, straight after the cycle. So if I survive the cycle, the first thing I'll be doing, 2 or 3 days after finishing in Kagoshima, will be hopping on like a car, driving to Yamaguchi Prefecture, about 3 or 4 hours away, and eating a blowfish and filming that.
So, beautiful.
What a great way to recover from a ridiculous cycle. Delicious. So today we are doing a Q&A, guys. We've got a lot of messages in the fax machine sent in by you all from around the world. So we're going to go through a few of them. And what have we got to start with, Mr. Donaldson?
We've got an email from Jace. Hello, Jace. G'day, lads. Jace here from Adelaide, down under Australia. I've been binge listening to your podcast and I'm finally up to date. I'm currently sitting in a Japanese garden in our city centre listening to the current podcast, getting the full 4D experience. How lovely. The garden is a tribute to Adelaide's sister Japanese city, Himeji. My question is, have you been to Himeji? And if it's on your bike route, my challenge to you, Chris, to see if there's an Aussie-style garden there to represent Adelaide as a sister city. Good luck with the ride, says Jace.
Nice. I must say, I'm quite impressed with your Australian accent. That's quite convincing.
Right? Would you like to twiddle my side? Burns a little. No worries, mate.
Oh, you've ruined it. By implementing a cliche phrase. Schoolboy error there.
Yeah.
Good, well done. Maybe you should do the rest of the podcast in that voice. As for Himeji, the city about 2 or 3 hours, I think it's 2 hours from Kobe, and it's got a splendiferous castle, which you may have seen in the James Bond movie, You Only Live Twice. I've always wanted to go to that castle in Himeji, but I've never had the time. But the cycle is actually going through that area, and I'll be doing that segment, I think, with Ryotaro, who's also never been there and always wanted to go. Ryotaro's joining straight after you, Pete. So I cycle with Pete around from Fukui to Kyoto, and then Ryotaro kicks in, jumps in, and then we go to Himeji. So, yeah, that'll be on the cycle. And so I will, Jace. I will try and find this Aussie-style garden. I don't know what that will entail. Probably a barbecue. I don't know. What does an Australian-style garden look like? Any idea?
What's big in Australia? Tim Cahill, a footballer. Maybe there'll be a statue to Tim Cahill. I can only imagine.
And a kangaroo.
I have actually
stereotypes
been,
in one garden.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually cork hat. I've actually been to Himeji and it's beautiful. Like you get out the train station, it's just a long road towards the castle that dominates the skyline, and it's stunning. It really is beautiful. And before I went into Himeji Castle, I spilt ice cream all down myself. I know, basically, the image of people...
Coolish.
Possibly coolish, yes. It was possibly chocolate-flavoured coolish, Chris. That's the thing. People just think I just drink and eat coolish, and that's kind of true. But I do occasionally visit castles.
Castles, sake, and ice cream.
Yeah, it's a wonderful castle. It's one of the, it's a World Heritage site, isn't it? It's a UNESCO site.
It must be good then.
It must be good. They know their onions.
I'm really looking forward to it. Genuinely, I've seen a lot of castles in Japan, and this is the most famous one, arguably.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Let's find that Aussie garden.
Yeah.
We've got a message, an email from Craig. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Have a trip to Japan coming up this November. Your channel and podcast have been great for planning and knowing what to expect in different places." Yeah, thanks, Craig. You've also talked about key phrases in the language before, and I'm wondering if there are any similar key body language or gestures you should keep in mind while interacting with people. Thanks, Craig. The most important thing I'd say is don't point. I always make that error, especially when I was a teacher, right? Because teachers point at things all the time. But in Japan, it's really rude to do that. I mean, is it kind of rude in the West? I can't remember.
It is kind of rude, isn't it? But like, I think if you point directly at someone's face, I mean, that's not good. But yeah, it's kind of. I mean, if you pointed at any part of someone's body, that's very invasive. Mm. Isn't that weird though? It's very invasive to point at someone's leg or, you know, belly.
Just going to go cycle across Japan pointing at random people in the fields of Japan.
What they say.
When you point at yourself in Japan, you point at your nose. You kind of sort of, if you say me, in the West, what you kind of point at our chest, right? In Japan, they point at their nose. They even touch their nose a little bit. Point at their nose. And what else? When you want forgiveness, when you've messed up and you kind of want to say sorry, you put your hands together like you're praying. I remember one day I offended a student in class in a really awkward event, which I've tried to wipe from my memory.
Right.
It was one of my first months, and there was I was getting students to list British desserts or something. I can't really remember. But anyway, I was getting one of the students to spell the phrase Knickerbocker Glory.
Right.
The ice cream dish, which I think is only popular in the UK. Don't know. I don't even think I've even had Knickerbocker Glory. Anyway, some student was spelling it out on the blackboard, and he spelt it as Knickerpoker G. And I was like, Knickerpoker G is brilliant. It sounds like a poker player or something. And everyone was laughing. And I sort of said like, oh, that could be your new nickname, Knickerpoker G, in a kind of tongue-in-cheek manner. And he got really angry and offended and upset because, like... I only dawned on me like this event could like come to haunt him for the rest of his time at school. Students calling him Knickerpoker G, you know, this shy Japanese guy, Japanese kid. So he got really angry and like smashed his textbooks on the desk for me calling him Knickerpoker G. And like me and the teacher had to apologise, and she like put her hands together and sort of was like, "Oh, sorry, you know, sumimasen." And I that's when I realised, right, so you put your hands together if you want forgiveness, like you're praying. So, yeah. I wonder how old Knickerpoker G's doing these days.
Yeah. I imagine he's probably a rapper with that name.
He better be. Knickerpoker G. But, I mean, I got bullied at school, didn't I? Remember the old, I think I told you, people used to call me, what was it, Trouble.
Trouble.
Just because my mum came up to me once when I was standing in a crowd of my friends and went, "Oh, hello, Trouble." And for 3 years, everyone just called me Trouble at school.
I mean, is that really bullying? Because that sounds like a badass nickname to me.
What, Trouble?
Yeah,
no, because they did it in that voice.
Trouble.
They came up to me and went, "Hello, Trouble." And all another time, I can't remember if I said this one. I was on the phone to my mum once at school, and a friend of mine overheard me speaking. My mum said, "You know, what do you want for dinner?" And I said, "I'll have sausages." And from that became my next nickname for the next 5 years. People just came up to me and went, "I'll have sausages." So those are my nicknames. So
I mean, they're quite funny. I mean, they're quite funny nicknames. Trouble. Oh, Trouble.
They're funny.
"I'll have sausages." You're literally a dog.
But when you have people doing it every day, like 10 times, you gets to you a bit.
"I'll have
sausages." Realised shortly after my Knickerpoker G mistake that I could be inflicting the same fate upon this poor boy. But there you go. Be careful what you do when you're a teacher in Japan. That was one of my biggest mistakes, I think, like doing that. And what else is there? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Don't point. And if you call someone Knickerpoker G and you want to apologise, put your hands together like you're praying.
Mm. Pile of sausages.
The only gestures you'll ever need.
Yeah, definitely. Do a lot of... I always do a lot of apologising.
Not again.
Japan. Brannon Olsen, not from Sweden, apparently. I enjoy your podcast every Thursday evening over my last coffee of the day. You shouldn't be drinking coffee in the evening. Brandon, not from Sweden. While driving home from work, hearing your fun stories from Japan takes the sting out of the Northern Virginia commuting, so I always look forward to listening. Chris, you're looking sharp. Are you still using the same weight loss methods now that you used in your earlier videos, or have you adopted any new ones?
Well, I haven't been eating sausages.
No sausages.
No more sausages. I have lost a bit of weight. It's because I've been using that the old watch thing, old step counter.
Step counter.
And I've been successfully doing 10,000 steps, I'd say 80% of the time for the last 2 months now.
Yeah.
So that's had an effect. And I don't eat that much. I've cut down to just two meals a day, for better or worse. So that helps. Yeah, but that's all I've been doing, really. I need to check my weight. I don't know how much weight what my current weight is. The last time I checked, I was 79 kilograms.
Right.
And before that, I was 85 kilograms, about a month before. So, yeah, I've lost a little bit, but I hope I've lost more. I'm going to weigh myself straight after this podcast, to be honest.
Oh, treat yourself.
My goal was to lose weight. Well, yeah. my goal was to lose weight, obviously, before the cycle, because every kilogram that I've got on me is going to make things a little bit tougher.
Mm.
So we'll see. But, yeah, I do try and do intermittent fasting, where you only eat for about 8 hours of the day. I typically eat between 11 a.m. till 7 p.m.
Right.
5 days of the week. And so maybe that helps as well to regulate my body or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. That's all I've done, really. Nothing more, nothing less. I haven't even really cycled that much.
Yeah, because you've been busy sort of filming and stuff back and forth. You did say that you did, like, did you do a 20-kilometre or something quite recently, and you quite enjoyed it? You don't feel quite so... your body didn't feel quite so ruined after it?
Yeah, so I cycled around. The video should be out by now. I cycled around Lake Kawaguchi at the base of Mount Fuji.
Yeah.
We did, I'm going to say, about 30 kilometres.
Mm.
And actually, the next day, my legs didn't hurt at all. I was really surprised. I thought I would be, like, falling over, crying in pain. but, yeah, no problem at all. So that was really encouraging. And I'm going to probably cycle tonight after this podcast. I bought a brand new seat for the bike, which shouldn't destroy my backside like the last seat did.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. But, yeah, I don't know. I still feel like I'm either going to be okay on the cycle or I'm absolutely fucked and I don't know which one it is yet. Like, we'll know. We'll know soon. We'll know really early on. But fingers crossed. But, no, if you want to lose weight, Brandon, just walk a lot and don't eat too much and you'll be fine. Good luck.
How you go.
And, oh, yeah, drink lots of coffee. But don't drink coffee at the end of the day. I used to do that, and I could never sleep. So, yes, be careful. Coffee's a dangerous thing.
Lovely old job. We got another email from Matt. Hello, Matt. Hi, Pete and Chris. I love your podcast and find you both hilarious. Especially Pete after a couple of cups of coffee. How rude. Anyways, Chris,
I don't understand that.
I mean, to be honest, whenever... Because I've got to record in the morning, Chris has to record in the evening. I'm usually just maybe one coffee in. I never have more than one coffee, usually. Matt says... anyways, Chris, we know you once had a Japanese girlfriend. We knew that. I'm just curious if there were any issues culture-wise and things you might need to know or remember when dating a Japanese girl or guy.
Well, it's not really a secret that I had a Japanese girlfriend. She was in quite a few of the videos. Like
secret.
The swear words video.
Oh.
She was in a few videos, I think three or four videos. And in my weight loss series that I made, she was there too.
Shouting
at you. We dated for... yeah. Oh, yeah, I got her... What was it? I got a really crappy present for Valentine's Day. I think I got her... Oh, yeah, I got her some post-it notes. Everyone loves post-it notes.
Yeah.
I use them, like, every day. I use, like, 20 post-it notes a day.
That's too many. Are you making a little pixel art on your window?
I figured she'd appreciate it, but no.
No.
It just didn't work. She lost her shit at me, and it doesn't work. So don't buy post-it notes for your Japanese partner.
Not classic Omiyagi kind of behaviour, really. It's like picking up some post-it notes.
What, like Karate Kid?
Is it Omiyagi? Omiyagi.
I thought you said, like...
Mr. Miyagi. Well, that's how I remember... Miyagi, I always think about giving a present of chocolate or something to Mr. Miyagi. That's the only reason why I remember that.
It's the sort of thing you'd do, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of tips for dating Japanese guy or girl, I think it gets serious very quickly.
Right.
Even after 6 months, there was talk of, like, marriage and stuff. And I was like, no, no, not yet. Not for another 20 years. Marriage is not a thing that I get excited about anyway. But, like, yeah, it was very early on. Things were discussed like that. It got serious very quick. It's because in Japan, you kind of settle down around 27 to 29 years old, typically.
Right, yeah.
After that, it becomes quite difficult. You know, there's a stigma in Japan around getting married or, you know, finding someone later on in your early 30s and whatnot.
Mm.
You know, it's said that you're out of date, you're expired if you're single after your 30s. Mm. You're someone not worth pursuing. So it does get very serious very quick. So that's something worth bearing in mind. And there are definitely cultural factors that make it a little bit difficult. It was fun at first because, you know, I could teach her about English and the UK and all the stuff that I knew. And she taught me about Japan. She kind of opened up a lot of doors for me, quite literally and metaphorically, opened up doors for me, because in Japan, guys go through the door first and the girls hold the door.
Do they?
A bit awkward, a bit weird.
What?
Yeah.
Not sure I understand that.
It's one of those things. That's why they say that Japan is sexist or something. But actually, I found out that historically, the guys went through the door first because there might be ninjas or samurai.
Oh,
or something.
Right.
It's kind of like a seen as being safe for the guy to go ahead first into the room. I don't know if someone's made that up. I don't know if it's true. But it's a nice little way of getting around that. So when I used to hold open the doors for my female colleagues, they'd be like, oh, wow, you're such a gentleman. And I'd be like, yeah, what?
Yeah.
And I went along with it. But, she kind of got me into life in Japan, and it was really fun for the first year, and then it got really, really serious, and I was just not ready for that, you know. So after that, it kind of fizzled out gradually, and then she moved away to Tokyo from Yamagata. I don't know, just bear in mind it can be very serious very quick. I don't like to make sweeping generalizations about Japanese guys or girls when it comes to dating. I don't know. Have we talked about it in a podcast before in depth? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think we probably have.
I think we're probably not in depth.
I think I always sort of see online on YouTube and stuff all of the channels that are talking about dating and stuff. Possibly because the sort of people who want to come to Japan, you know, 60% are young lads who like anime and video games, and you know, think that Japanese women are the best. I think there's a lot of that kind of fraff on the internet where it's like, how to date Japanese girls. You might be a guy who's not very handsome in your hometown, but in Japan, you're going to be a real hot guy. It's not the case. Not the case anywhere.
That's right.
Absolute nonsense.
I mean, to be fair, I do have a video called How to Date Japanese Girls.
Yeah, but that was silly. That was a silly one, though, wasn't it? It puts bums on seats, doesn't it? It puts bums on seats. Yeah, but you're being facetious. It's a pastiche of those videos.
Yeah, I mean, it is just one satirical mess. I didn't take it seriously at all, but a lot of people did. There is this, I think there's that sense of, as a foreigner, maybe you sort of just turn up to Japan and the girls will flock to you.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine and everything will be brilliant and it'll be great. And no, it doesn't really work like that at all in my experience. It doesn't work like that. I think Japanese girls in general, I think they would find it complicated and a bit annoying to date a foreigner or to have a serious relationship. Mm. Unless you speak Japanese fluently.
Yeah.
In which case, it's quite easy, I think. But there's that factor in the way. Because in Japan, they put there's a massive emphasis on the family, right? And it can, you know, it can be a real problem if you're dating someone who's from overseas and you have to leave Japan and abandon your family and whatnot. So there's a lot of big factors in play that can make the relationship a little bit difficult or a bit serious. But if you are coming to Japan, you learn Japanese and you become fluent and you settle down in Japan with your partner, then I think it's a lot easier.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Sweet chocolate.
Wow.
We've got an email from Alex. Hello, Alex. Hi, Chris and Pete. I listen to the podcast Going To and Leaving Work. It ramps me up for work and also winds me down for home. I was wondering if either of you had a place, whether as big as a city or small as a shop, that you really want to visit, but you just haven't done it yet. Why that place? What stopped you? So that's Alex from North Carolina. Is there somewhere you really want to go?
There is. There's an arcade in Tokyo that's modelled after the Kowloon Walled City. It's called the Kawasaki Warehouse. I've never been there. Quite a few of my friends have been and loved it. For those of you that don't know, Kowloon Walled City was a ridiculous little residential area in Hong Kong. It was the densest place on earth by far, I think, and it was knocked down in the 90s. I think there was hundreds of thousands of people living there in just a few blocks in this kind of conglomeration of apartments. It almost looked like a big giant cube, and people lived in just such ridiculous close quarters, had such a cool atmosphere. And if you just look it up online, it's it just looks incredible. Like, yeah. I'm kind of sad that it's gone. On the other hand, it doesn't look like a place that humans should be living, really.
No.
But it's, they've got an arcade in Tokyo that's modelled after it, or what they think it might look like. And it looks really cool, and I want to go there and make a video. Also really want to go to Kagoshima, the end goal of the cycle, because everyone I talk to about the city of Kagoshima absolutely loves it. I think it's because there's a volcano in the sea, like a few kilometres from the city, which looks really picturesque and cool. So, yes, those are my two things I want to do. What about you?
I'm just Googling this arcade. It looks amazing. But also, I'm a big fan of the idea of the Kowloon Walled City. I visited the site that used to be the Kowloon Walled City. They've obviously knocked it down, or they knocked it down in the late 90s, and it's now... I think we've spoken about the Walled City before on this podcast, but... They've made a little peace park, but it was fascinating. Fascinating creation. These people just sort of all living on top of each other and stuff. But the annoying thing is, again, because I don't drive, it was a bit of an eye opener sort of visiting sort of Niigata sort of area where you took me or wherever we went. Was it Yamagata? Yamagata. Yamagata. Sort of area.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a bit like, that's the first sort of taste
of rural life.
Yeah, I loved it. And so, and also like all of the, like Okinawa. I've never been to Okinawa. Never been to Kumamoto, places like that. So yeah, no, it's definitely somewhere I definitely want to go. I really enjoyed Nagasaki and Fukuoka, so I'd quite actually like to explore that that part of Japan again. But just go around a little bit more. There's never enough time. Never enough time, Chris.
Yeah. I know, right? I know. I forgot. Yeah, I really want to go to Nagasaki. I want to go to a place called, I think it's called Hirado, which is where the British landed in Japan in like the 1600s, the early 1600s, right. That's it, where the British turned up and first built relations with the Japanese before, of course, they were expelled shortly after, a few decades later. But I've always wanted to go there because I've read a really cool book called Samurai William, and it's about William Adams, the first foreign samurai who came to Japan from Gillingham, which is not far from where I'm from in Kent. It took him 2 years to sail to Japan, for God's sake.
Jeez.
And he became the right-hand man of the emperor, Tokugawa Ieyasu. Became like his top advisor or something. So, yeah, I really want to go there. I really want to see what the British settlement looked like, the sort of place that the British would have turned up to, you know, 400 years ago. So that's just outside, it's just outside Nagasaki. So, yeah, kill two birds with one stone. Go to Nagasaki, go to Harado. I'll be delighted. That's on my hit list.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah. Message here from Aaron, who says, to Chris and Pete, howdy from Texas. Really enjoying the podcast. Been listening to it while I work at my job. Work as a chandelier installer.
Wow.
Putting 4,000 crystals on a chandelier can get really boring. And it's great to have an engaging podcast to listen while I work. That is mental. 4,000 crystals on a chandelier. Well done to you, Aaron.
That's too many.
I just hope we don't ever jump scare you while you're listening to the podcast and the aforementioned crystal chandelier comes crashing to the ground. Like bad. My question.
Only Fools and Horses.
Well, he's from Texas.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Won't know about Britain's biggest sitcom.
He might do.
Only Fools and Horses, check it out.
He might do.
My question for you all is, have either of you been to any of Japan's aquariums, or do you have any interest in visiting one? I'd love to see a video on Sumida Aquarium in Tokyo or Osaka Aquarium. I've heard Japan has some of the most beautiful aquariums in the world. The Japanese have a huge influence on the aquarium hobby, and I'd like to hear what you think from Aaron. What I think, Aaron, is that Osaka Aquarium is pretty damn good. I've been there a few times. And actually, we might go on the cycle, but just south of Sakata, the town I used to live, and where we'll be cycling on the first day of the trip, they've got a jellyfish aquarium, which is the biggest jellyfish aquarium in the world, and it's absolutely stunning. There's thousands, millions of jellyfish of all colours and shapes and sizes floating around. Very picturesque, very beautiful. Mm. And I really want to film it, if we get the chance. So, yeah, that's my knowledge of aquariums. Go to Osaka Aquarium, it's brilliant, and go to the jellyfish aquarium.
I always find aquariums quite relaxing, because obviously everyone's floating around, but like anything with like jellyfish, anything with like octopus, and there's subdued lighting because obviously, you know, they light up the tanks and then you're in the darkness. It's very, very therapeutic, I think.
Trippy. The jellyfish one certainly is. Like, yeah, I probably will film it. I don't know if it'll fit in nicely with the cycle, but yeah, there's a really nice point where you just stand in front of this tank and there's like hundreds, thousands of jellyfish just floating around. It
Amazing.
Looks hypnotically beautiful. So I might try and fit that in. What have we got?
Hurtling towards the show, but we do have space for Daniel's email. Hello, Daniel. Hi, Chris and Pete. So as far as I can tell from your videos/podcasts, Japan is a very polite society and country in general. So with that in mind, I was wondering, what are some examples of common Japanese profanity? How likely would one be to hear language like that every day? Day-to-day, or as far as your experience goes. I love the podcast and videos. Been a fan for a while now. Keep the good work and entertaining me in rainy Wales. Oh, Daniel, and it's only going to get rainier because we are getting bad with a storm at the moment in the UK. Have you got any swear words for Daniel to abuse his Japanese friends?
Yeah, I've got a few. I mean, I don't want to go too far into the wacky world of Japanese swear words, but I mean, the first one everyone knows is baka, baka, which means stupid, right?
Yeah.
If you want to go one step further, baka yaro means like next level of stupid, you know, it's kind of next level to that. Baka yaro. If you've ever played the arcade game Chochabudai Gaishi, where you flip the table over, which I put in a video, the fourth or fifth video I ever made, you say that as you flip the table, like the game actually shouts it out really loud. So it's not a serious one. People in Japan don't really use the word baka that much. They don't seem to do. One mistake a lot of foreigners tend to make is they use baka in a self-deprecating way, as if to say, "Oh, I'm stupid." But people don't really do that in Japan. I just find it's awkward and weird if you do that to yourself. So, yeah, if you want to, if you, someone's pissed you off, though, just say, just call them baka or baka yaro, and you'll win. Also, there's kuso, which means shit.
Yeah,
kuso, K-U-S-O. Pete's favourite.
Kuso.
What do you fucking say?
Satisfying.
And then there's shine, which means go die.
Oh,
which literally means go and die. Shine. And the last one, which isn't really a swear word, to be honest. I don't even know why it's on my list. But I was with my aforementioned Japanese girlfriend once, driving around, and we got pulled over by the police because she did something really minor. I think she didn't stop at a crossroads where there's no cars coming anyway. But she didn't stop, and the police pulled her over. And when she saw the sirens, she sort of went, "Oh, mukatsuku, which means like, oh, so irritating. Mukatsuku. But that's not really a swear word. You can kind of say that to yourself. It's not a polite word, though. Don't use it in formal situations. Don't use any of these words in formal situations or to people who are higher up than you. Keep them to friends. But yeah, I like mukatsuku.
Mukatsuku.
It's if you've been pissed off by something, just use that.
I'm going to write that one
down.
That's
my favourite one.
Mukatsuku.
On that naughty list.
Beautiful.
Mukatsuku.
Fantastic.
Don't write them down. You're going to bloody use them when you come to Japan. I know what you're like.
If they don't let me in because of my cholera epidemic, my one-man cholera epidemic, I'm going to go on Mukatsuku. Mukatsuku. I am literally writing it down.
if that was, one-man cholera epidemic.
Yeah, that's what they
call
me. Potential
YouTube channel name right there.
Yeah, damn right. Oh, wow. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
That's all for today, though, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll be back next week.
These go so fast, these podcasts.
We have such
fun. A few of your questions. Yeah. If you guys have any more questions to send in to us, abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be right here, sitting by the fax machine, for your emails to come through. We'll be back same time next week on Wednesday. Sometimes I say Wednesday, sometimes I say Thursday.
Depending on where
you are in the world, it comes out a different time. Personally, Thursday for me, so I guess it is just Thursday in general. But anyway, we'll be here. See you then, guys. Until then, have a great week, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world. Have a good one.
We'll speak soon.
Mukatsuku.
Psych.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
and receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.